This is the Happy Rant Sports Podcast, in which Ted Cluck and Barnabas Piper rant about old sports, new sports, sports books, sports movies, and anything else related to sports that they feel like. Enjoy.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Sports Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined, as always, by my good friend and my partner in sports radio, Barnabas Piper. Pipe, it has been a hot minute since you and I have done a sports podcast, and I think that's due to probably some just busyness in life getting in the way of us talking sports on the radio. But I'm excited to be back doing this, and I'm excited to hear your thoughts on some sports things. But before we get into that, Piper, I want to talk about a sponsor, a very special sponsor, and it's a company by the name of 503 Sports. You can find them at 503-sports.com. And 503 Sports is probably like my dream company. If I could just create a company out of thin air to make products that I would love, it would be this company, because they do retro sports jerseys. They do jerseys inspired by leagues and teams that used to be around and are now around no longer. So the World League of American Football, the XFL, the USFL, all these vintage football leagues. There's old-time baseball stuff. And I'm really, really stoked to partner with this company. I think they're out of the Pacific Northwest, where we have a lot of listeners. So 503-sports.com, they have agreed to send us some jerseys in exchange for this promo. So I'm super pumped. Pipe, what did you get from 503 Sports?
I got a couple hats. So it was a I was looking at the jerseys, and there was a Pittsburgh Pipers basketball jersey,
yeah,
which is
incredible, dude. Incredible.
I think it's an ABA team.
Yep.
And they'll customize them. Like, part of the jersey cost is customizing. But I was like, well, if it says Pipers on the front, I don't know what to put on the back.
Right.
Because it would be very redundant. So I decided to go with hats, because I'm a big hat wearer. So I think I went with a Washington Senators hat and then a Homestead Grays hat.
Nice.
So Washington Senators being the team that became the Minnesota Twins. So they moved to Minnesota. I think there was two or three different iterations of the Senators, because then they became the Senators again and then moved to Montreal,
yeah,
and became the Expos and then moved back to Washington as the Nationals. So it's all very confusing. Mm-hmm. And then the Homestead Grays were one of the most prominent historic Negro League teams that had like Josh Gibson and Satchel Paige.
Wow.
And all of the, not necessarily all of the greatest, Oscar Charleston played on them. So most of the best players in the Negro Leagues passed through there at some point. And I, as a baseball history fan, that was my,
that was
the one I was most excited about.
Dude, that's what I think I love the most about this company, is that it allows like people to engage with sports history in a unique way. And like you, I'm a big sports history guy, and my thing is kind of vintage football stuff. So to get a USFL jersey in the mail or some swag from those teams, it's really fun for me. So this time, I went baseball as well. I went with a 1969 Seattle Pilots jersey. So the Seattle,
ooh, those are crisp. I like
they them. Are man. They're really nice, powder blue with a little yellow accent. And so this franchise was the precursor to the Seattle Mariners being in Seattle. So Jim Boughton, who just passed away, actually wrote one of the great sports books of all time called Ball Four. He was a Seattle Pilots pitcher, and this jersey is kind of an homage to him, an homage to the forerunners to the Seattle Mariners there in Seattle. So I'm excited, man. Looking ahead to spring training and pitchers and catchers. Football has kind of, this always happens during football season, Piper. It always kind of ends for me before it's actually over. So right around like after the wild card round, before the divisional round, I just kind of lose interest in it. And
is that because you don't have a team that you're like hanging your hat on to, like as a Vikings fan, as of right now, we're recording this on a Thursday. The Vikings are playing the Niners on a Saturday,
yeah,
which means that my fandom might be over in 72 hours. But,
yeah.
Is that because you don't have that, and so the games have just sort of,
yeah,
reduced to the point where you're like, well, I got room for other stuff in my fandom right now?
Yeah, dude, I think it is. And you know, it's funny you mention that. I kind of have adopted fandom through my son over the years. And actually, I wrote a column about this that ran a couple of days ago. But just the whole idea that as a parent, and maybe it's different for you raising girls, but I'm guessing there's some overlap here. Like, you begin to really like the stuff that your kids like. And my son, because he spent kind of the early half of his growing up years in Michigan, was a big Tom Brady fan, and he ended up being a big New England Patriots fan. So he has Pats jerseys and swag, and he's gotten me some Pats swag over the years. And I ended up just kind of being a Pats fan and, you know, have started to care about, again, fan stuff, I guess. And the Pats lost this last weekend. So yeah, to me, that was kind of the official close of of caring about this football season, I guess. But
so quick aside on that. Yeah. This does pertain to your son. So
yeah.
There was obviously the Pats lost in the first round. That's not a thing that has happened much in the last 18 years.
Yeah.
So that you're talking about Tristan.
Yeah, talking about Tristan. He's 17, junior in high school.
In his lifetime, he has not experienced the Pats sucking.
No.
And to be fair, they didn't suck this year. They had one of the best defenses in the league. They just, their offense wasn't that great, and so they got
right.
But there was an interview with Bill Belichick after the game where somebody was like, "What would you say to Pats fans who have stuck with them through thick and thin?" And he's looked at the guy and goes, "To be honest, it hasn't been all that thin around here for the last couple of decades."
Yeah.
And which I
what
thought,
a great
I'm like,
answer.
That is such a good answer.
Yeah.
He's so self-aware. That, like, yeah, we've had a good run. If fans are complaining, that's kind of insane.
Exactly.
So my question is, how did Tristan take it? As like, this is kind of his first real disappointment.
Yeah. Man, that's...
Because they've been so good for so long.
Yeah, that's a great question. So Tristan is just like his dad, sadly, in that we are both the worst losers in the history of sports. We're just the worst. We're a-holes, man. We're such a-holes when it comes to losing. And I don't know. I mean, it's that whole tension between if you become too comfortable with losing as an athlete, then you're probably not cut out for it. But I wish we could both grow in this area. And sadly, like, I'm not the person to help him grow in it because I'm so bad at it myself. But yeah, the way we work is that our flame burns really hot for a really short time. So, like, when the team is losing and immediately after, there's, like, white-hot rage.
Clear the room.
Yeah, you have to clear the room and despair and all that. But then, like, 24 hours later, Tristan was fine. And for me, like, I think it went to a real, not to sound like a middle-aged lady here, but a real Enneagram 4 place in which, after the Pats lost that night, so we have jerseys, and I'm sitting in my office. This is a ridiculous, like, mental picture, but I'm sitting in my office in my vintage Adidas, like, late 90s Patriots Andy Katzenmoyer jersey. And
that is a deep cut.
That's
right
a deep
there.
Cut.
The Ohio State linebacker.
The Ohio State linebacker, such yeah. a bad A. Like, if you were a white linebacker in the late 90s, which I was, you wanted to look like Andy Katzenmoyer. He had the barbed wire tattoo.
Yeah, he was like King neck roll.
King neck roll, the visor, the tattoos. Like, he looked so cool. So I had to get a Katzenmoyer Pats jersey. So I'm sitting there in my office, and I couldn't sleep pipe because, to me, this Patriots loss signaled maybe the last time my son and I would ever watch a Tom Brady game together because it's very much up in the air as to whether Brady will be back at all or whether he'll be back with the Pats. And as I was sitting there thinking about it, I got really worried that my son would, like, grow out of it and we wouldn't get to watch Pats games together anymore, which made me really sad. And I think I'm already, like, kind of teed up emotionally for getting sad because he's getting older and we're starting to look at colleges and all the normal stuff you do, right? And all the
And as an Enneagram 4, you revel in sadness.
Dude, I revel in sadness and I revel in nostalgia. So I'm just thinking about all the, like, great moments we've had together watching the Pats and watching Super Bowls because they have had so much success and we've had so much fun with it. So, like, to me, it was just, I could see down the road all of this coming to an end in a sad way. So for me, it was less about the team losing. Like, yeah, quantifiably, I don't really care if a bunch of people with whom I have zero connection lose a football game. I mean, it's not like my nephew plays for the Pats or my son or whatever. So it's not a, you know, it's not a huge blow that way. But I think just what it represented for us relationally, that's kind of what made it hard, if that makes sense.
No, I much prefer that answer to like trying to sort out should you be disappointed after 18 straight years of success. Like yeah. Making it personal is much more interesting and a much better answer, because if you had tried to justify disappointment based on just the football, there would have been an audible eye roll on this.
Oh, totally.
But
dude.
I liked your answer.
Totally. And I'll tell you what made it harder, and this is going to be an unpopular opinion with our Tennessee listeners. This is going to sound like a hot take. I didn't like that it was the Titans that struck the death blow to Tom Brady and the Patriots. I didn't like that it was a quarterback named Ryan. Guys named Ryan should be counselors at camp. They shouldn't be the guy ending Tom Brady's career. You know what I mean?
Well, and to make matters worse, so we've bemoaned this a billion times on this podcast, yeah. Which is the sheer boringness of the Titans.
Yeah.
What this game did is ensured that they are going to bring back a quarterback named Ryan mm-hmm. to lead the team next year, maybe on the franchise tag, maybe on a, you know,
some kind of a short-term contract. Exactly.
And he's not good.
Right.
He's just better than garbage.
Dude, it's like...
And so...
Yeah, no, go ahead.
I was gonna say, so it just means that boredom will continue, and like... They're now under the delusion that you can win by running Derrick Henry 30 times, and that only works when the Pats offense is trash.
Yeah.
That doesn't work against anybody else. The Titans are going to get rolled this week.
Absolutely they are. Absolutely.
I'm predicting it, and by the time this releases, we will know whether or not I was right. But they're going to get hammered because their offense is mediocre at best.
Yep.
And their defense is strong, but like a strong defense doesn't make a fun team to watch.
Yeah.
So
yeah, well, an abysmal like arena football uniform doesn't make a fun team to watch, and that's something we've discussed ad nauseum. Yeah, the Titans staying with Ryan Tannehill is sort of like when your friend gets married, but you know that like the girl he's marrying, he's settling for, and you're like, yeah, she's okay, you know, yeah, could have done worse, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and as a Vikings fan who devoted $84 million guaranteed dollars to Kirk Cousins, it's like a slightly graduated version of the same thing.
Totally.
Like Kirk Cousins is better than Ryan Tannehill, but Kirk Cousins is somebody who needs the perfect everything around him to succeed.
Right.
He's not going to drag a team to anywhere,
dude. Right. You're and always so, waiting for the other shoe to drop with Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, and so and it, you know, in the game against the Saints, it very nearly did.
Yeah,
but. It's just a, yeah, there's a feeling of like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
You know, you have some moments where you're like, that was really great, but it's not going to last. Like, people were so excited when the Vikings beat the Saints, and I was too. Like, I let out a yell in my living room that probably scared the neighbors, and it absolutely terrified my dog.
Oh, no.
But then within 24 hours, I was like, oh, wait, they just did this 2 years ago when they beat the Saints on the Minneapolis Miracle play to Stephon Diggs and then got pasted by the Eagles.
Right.
I don't think they're going to get pasted by the Niners,
but
I don't think they're going to win either.
Yeah.
So it's just sort of like, that's Kirk Cousins.
I know, dude. And you're kind of like low-key jealous of all the fun quarterbacks that like other teams have. It's a tough place to
I'm not low-key jealous. I in my lifetime, there has never been a Vikings quarterback, with the exception of like 10 game stretches, that you're like, we've got this guy, we have a chance to win. Take the Seahawks, for example.
Yeah.
They're not a good team.
No.
But they have Russell Wilson.
They have an awesome quarterback.
And he can beat anybody on any given day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So
I have no idea what that's like. It seems lovely.
Oh, it does seem lovely. No, I get it, man. I totally get it. So let's walk through Vikings quarterbacks in your lifetime. And I want to archive the ones you were most excited about. So let's start with Tavarius Jackson. Was there a three-game stretch where you talked yourself into Tavarius Jackson?
Yeah, like the preseason.
Okay.
Where, you know, because he's athletic and he had a big arm,
and
he was bad at everything else.
Yep.
Like he could throw the ball very far to the wrong place, and he was, you know, he was mobile.
Yeah, for sure.
Tavarius Jackson was a playmaker who would get you excited and go, man, if he could just do that like 8 times in a row instead of once every 8 plays, we might have a quarterback.
Absolutely. Christian Ponder. So high draft choice, first rounder.
Yeah.
Were you able to talk yourself into Christian Ponder for a moment?
No, I tried so hard to convince my, because he was one of the last quarterbacks, or he was kind of, there was a 2 or 3 year stretch where teams who were quarterback desperate made really high draft picks because of the value of the position and totally whiffed on the guy. Yeah. So like Blake Bortles is one of those. Christian Ponder was one of those. Who else?
EJ Manuel Blaine was Gabbert. One of those. Yeah.
EJ Manuel and Christian Ponder were kind of like part and parcel in terms of guys. You're like, really them? Yeah. So it was one of those things where I was like, yeah, we need a quarterback. But then I looked at him, I was like, he wasn't even good in college.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to believe in him. And then after about two games, I was like, oh, he's just really bad.
Yeah.
Like he didn't even have a career as a backup after that. He wasn't even somebody who could kind of go be a solid clipboard holder, game manager, step in late in the game, that kind of thing. He just wasn't.
Yeah, dude, good. It's crazy. Like his career just fell off a cliff. And usually as a first round draft choice, by default, you get like a second act somewhere else. Like Marcus Mariota is going to go on and have a second act, and he could probably have a 5 or 6 year run as a clipboard holder. Christian Ponder didn't even get that. Nor did EJ Manuel really. So it's crazy how those guys kind of fell off a cliff. I've got another one for you, Pipe. Another Vikings quarterback. This one's going to be tough to talk about. Brett Favre. Brett Favre comes in.
I hated Brett Favre.
Yeah, you always hated Brett Favre. But what?
So
was there any level of like a little crackle of excitement that like at least we have him and maybe we could do something?
So. Yes, for this reason. But let me back up. When they got Brett Favre, I felt very much like, oh, this is the midnight crossroads deal with the devil.
Yep.
We have just sold our soul to the devil.
Yep.
And that means you get a tremendous amount of success until the devil comes calling. And I knew the moment they signed him, the devil will come calling at the most inopportune time. He's going to do a thing to ruin this. After it has, like, when it will hurt the most.
Yeah.
Which, if you remember that first season, it absolutely did because it was the last minute of the NFC Championship game when he threw a classic Brett Favre throw across his body into the middle of the field, stupid interception against the Saints.
Yeah.
After they cheated all game and broke all of his bones.
Yeah.
But in the middle of the season, it was really hard not to be excited about the way they were playing because they're just. Dante Culpepper had some moments as a Vikings quarterback where he was a phenomenal playmaker.
Yeah,
he and Randy
huge
Moss
athlete,
put up,
you know,
video game.
Yeah,
players.
Yeah.
And just, yeah, he was 6'4", 270 pounds, mobile, ran people over, big arm, all that. And then he got hurt and you know, his career basically ended as well.
Yeah.
But Favre was like that in terms of just, man, he makes plays we've never seen. And they had Sidney Rice when he was healthy,
yep.
And Percy Harvin and Adrian Peterson. And just, it was an explosive team.
Totally.
But I always knew the other shoe was going to drop. And so when it did, like, I normally when it at that point in my fandom, when the Vikings did something disappointing to end a season, it was like throw the remote, break a glass, like just full on temper tantrum. When that happened, I just turned the TV off and walked out of the room. I was like, well, of course that happened.
Yeah.
Like that. It barely hurt because I was like, yeah, that's what was going to happen from the get-go.
Exactly. Now, Piper, if you could like put on your GM hat for a minute, if you're Rick Spielman, and you could trade boring, unsexy Kirk Cousins for any of those guys that we just mentioned, like who would you deal Kirk Cousins for? And it could be multiple guys out of that list.
Wait, of the previous
Vikings? Of the previous Vikings quarterback? If you could bring any of them back in a trade, like you ship Kirk Cousins out of town and you bring in one of these other guys, who would it be?
Man. Ah, that's tough. I mean, Kirk Cousins is probably the third. Well, you take 1 year of Randall Cunningham.
Oh, dude. We didn't talk about Randall. Yeah. Oh, he was awesome.
In my lifetime. There have been like Rich Gannon was a Vikings quarterback at one point. He was kind of mediocre.
He was great with the Raiders though.
Yeah, he got into a system that played to his strengths. I'd say Favre had the best season.
Yep.
Culpepper had the best run. Yep. Cunningham was right there with Favre as best
transcendent season.
And then Cousins is probably the best. Other quarterback. But the answer to your question would be Teddy Bridgewater, who we didn't talk about, because the Vikings made the decision to let Teddy walk. Mm-hmm. and to sign Kirk Cousins. And everything I wanted them, and this is on record on this podcast, to bring Teddy back.
Same.
Because I thought Teddy Two Gloves was the right guy at the right cost, because it would have saved him $12 million a year or
something. The fan base loved him. Yeah, there was to me very little downside to him.
There were significant health questions because his knee injury was really bad, but as he showed this year, he in the right with a good system, and I think he could run the system they're running now.
Oh, I agree.
It's really quarterback friendly. I would trade Kirk Cousins for Teddy Bridgewater right now. And I think a lot of people would say I'm insane because Cousins just put up a really good year statistically, but I just don't have any faith. Like, I think he could potentially just lay a monster egg at San Francisco.
Well, because he's laid so many eggs in the past, you know, you've got egg laying precedent there all over the place with his career. And he's just not fun to like, you know, there's a little bit of a piece there where as a fan, you want to be really stoked about your quarterback and, you want to have reasons to be stoked about your quarterback. And, he's just a hard guy to get excited about.
I mean, I think if I was going to trade any quarterback in Vikings history or like my fandom history, it would be Culpepper. Yeah. Because healthy Culpepper with the defensive rules that exist today versus when he was quarterback, I mean, he was throwing for like 4,700 yards back when that meant something.
Right.
And with the way that the spread offense has come in, his mobility, I mean, I think he would destroy the league right now.
Dude, could you imagine him running like QB powers a la Cam Newton? Like if those kind of plays existed when he was in the league, dude, he would have shredded on plays like that.
Yeah. And I mean, people don't remember, but he was like a 70% completion guy in college. Yeah. He was accurate. He had great touch on his passes. He wasn't just like a cannon arm guy like Cam Newton doesn't.
Yeah.
He's cannon armed, and you kind of have to twist the offense to play to his strengths. So yeah, I think Culpepper would be a beast in today's NFL.
Yeah.
And also the way that quarterbacks are protected now, he would take a lot fewer hits.
Dude, he'd be impossible
to sack. Which would extend his career.
I mean, like, how do you sack Dante Culpepper in 2020? You can't put a helmet on his helmet. You know, you can't, I mean, you can't get anywhere near, like, the upper chest or helmet with him. How do you take a guy like that down? It's compelling. I think that's a good one. And when I ask you the question, that was kind of the guy I had in mind, too. How fun would it be to bring back Dante Culpepper in this offense with Dalvin Cook, you know, with the receivers that you have? I think he does really well in that kind of scenario.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to imagine him in some of the offenses that, you know, if you put him in an offense, not like the Ravens offense, cause that's built around Lamar running, but like a Patrick Mahomes-esque, like the Andy Reid kind of offense or the Eagles offense that creates space for quarterbacks and that kind of thing. Like, Dante Culpepper at his peak was better than what Carson Wentz is now.
For sure.
And Carson Wentz threw for 4,000 yards with like garbage men for receivers this year. Like, he had, they were literally like, oh, you clean the stadium. Can you come run a 40 for us?
Exactly.
So I think, he would be insane. I would love to see that. Obviously, that's pretend, but man, would it be fun.
Yeah, and it sucks too because you have the far and away the least interesting quarterback left in the playoffs, which is just, kind of.
Wait, the Titans are still in it.
Oh, that's right, dude.
So careful.
I forgot about Ryan. Ryan, the camp counselor turned quarterback.
Well, forgetting about Ryan tells you just how interesting
yeah,
he is.
That's true. I guess I already kind of mentally assumed that the Titans are not still in it. But who knows? They could surprise us. But yeah, we've got some. There are some exciting quarterbacks left. I mean, there's Jimmy G, who may not be better than Kirk Cousins, but who has the perception of still being better than Kirk Cousins. Are we with Aaron Rodgers? Are we to like Aaron Rodgers' corpse phase yet, or is that still a couple years down the road? Because I feel like there's been a drop off with Rodgers, but we may not be to like last year of Peyton Manning's career level yet with him.
I think what we've discovered is that Aaron Rodgers is like the Russell Westbrook of quarterbacks. In that he is probably the most, or on the top end of physical talent of quarterbacks.
Yeah.
The plays he can make, the throws he can make, the way that he can drag a team to victory, but he refuses to play inside any functional system.
Yeah.
I saw some stat that one of these NFL and like NFL.com analyst put up the other day. And it was Rodgers has been in the bottom five in the league in terms of holding on to the ball the longest as a quarterback, like seven out of the last eight years. So it doesn't matter. If you want to run a quick strike offense, he won't do
it. Yeah, dude, which is so weird but because in college at Cal, he was the consummate like throw on rhythm West Coast quarterback. Like that's what the NFL thought it was getting in Aaron Rodgers. And he's kind of had this weird career arc where he's just gone a complete 180 from what he was in college.
Well, I mean, and he's way better because nobody thought he was going to be first ballot Hall of Famer when he came out. Because what did he do? They went like 30th and, you know, last quarterback in the first
small
round.
Small hands,
like
that was the knock on him. Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think he's one of those guys who, like, if he could get out of his own way mentally and kind of do a Patrick Mahomes. Because Mahomes was like a freewheeling playmaker in college, but has melded himself to this system. And Andy Reid has adjusted the system to play to his strengths. And so now you have like this maximization of really good offensive system because Reid's a genius as a play caller and a scheme guy. And Mahomes using his talent to maximize the system. And Rodgers has just never done that. So I don't think he's at the end of the line, but he might be shortening his career or shortening his reign of success by just being stubborn.
Yeah. No, I agree, man. I totally agree. It's really interesting. I don't think the Packers do anything in the playoffs.
No, I mean, the Vikings should have beat them twice. The second game, the Packers beat them, but like they didn't beat them in a way that you're like, oh, that team's way better. The Vikings just like played so bad. And yeah, I don't think that – and I think the Vikings are like a middling playoff team, so – I don't see the Packers doing much the rest
Piper,
of the
let
way.
Me ask you a Nashville question vis-a-vis the Packers. Do you encounter a lot of Packer fans in Nashville? Because like I feel like here in West Tennessee, there's a kind of a weirdly inordinate number of Packer fans.
Not a ton here, but that's because Nashville, more than where you are in Tennessee, is a land of transplants. Yeah. And so we have a lot of Chicago people, a lot of New York people, a lot of California people. A lot of people from all over the South, which means that it's a huge SEC area. So like Alabama, Georgia, LSU, Ole Miss, obviously UT, so forth. I don't encounter too many. There's a few more like, honestly, there's a lot more Kansas City people here that I've encountered than Packers.
Interesting.
People.
Man, that would be a fun team to like, wouldn't it? Kansas City. I feel like they got, they got weapons all over the place on that offense. It'd be a really fun team.
I wonder how a Kansas City fan feels about Andy Reid, because obviously, like I said, Reid is a genius when it comes to scheme and running an offense and everything, but his career track record is 100% success on terrible clock management.
Yeah, that's true.
Like he's going to do some dumb clock management thing that costs his team at some point.
He's
right?
kind of the Kirk Cousins of like, you know, disappearing in games that really matter. You know, Andy Reid will get you. He'll get you right up to the edge, you know. And then, yeah, there's always some gaff, you know, some blunder in the really big moment. But I'm sort of rooting for him to overcome that.
Man, I would love to see him overcome, because I feel like he doesn't get enough credit as a coach because of his postseason. Like he hasn't pushed it across the finish line, but he's been one of the best coaches in the top five coaches in the NFL for the last back to Donovan McNabb. So what are you talking, 15 years?
Yeah, he's been great. And any team would take him. You know, I mean, he's one of those NFL head coaches that if he hits the market, like he's going to be off the market immediately. But speaking of coaching hires, Piper, let's talk about some interesting NFL head coaching movement and see if any of these move the needle for you. So the very first hire, I think, was Ron Rivera to the Redskins. Any commentary on that, Piper?
I was talking about this with a friend recently, and we were in agreement that the Redskins are the most boring team in the NFL and have been since like 1993.
Interesting. Suss out boring.
They have no. Who's the last exciting player they had on their team? Like the player that you're like, man, even if they're not like, I don't care about the team, I'll watch it just
to
see.
2012 RG3, but it was a really quick moment, you know? It was a
Okay. So there was the flash in the pan. That's true. Prior to that, who, like Clinton Portis?
Yeah, Clinton Portis was great, but you weren't necessarily like flipping on the Redskins just to watch Clinton Portis.
Right. I mean, Clinton Portis is great in the same way that like, kind of Dalvin Cookish in that, like, yeah, great player, but
you're
like,
not watching
unless
Dalvin
you're a fan of the team,
you're like,
you're not going to sign up for NFL Network to watch him. So, and then they've just very rarely have they been utter garbage. Yeah. There's a lot of like 6 to 8 win seasons, a lot of mediocre everything, and one of the NFL's worst owners. Like, and here's the other thing: I don't know if Ron Rivera is a good coach.
Yeah,
I think he's a perfectly like he deserves to have an NFL job. He is a good NFL coach, so in that sense, yes, he's good. But out of NFL coaches, is he a move the needle? Is he going to bring them to a like be consistent playoff contender? Yeah. I don't know. He's pretty up and down in Carolina. You know, he had 6 win seasons and 12 win seasons, so it's hard to say.
Dude, I actually think Ron Rivera would have been great for Cleveland in that he would have been an adult in the room. He would have brought them, like, a stabilizing presence that they haven't had. But yeah, for the Redskins, I'm not sure he brings them out of the doldrums of mediocrity. And you're right. They've had good players. Like, when you look at the last 20 years of the Redskins, they had Sean Taylor. They had Clinton Portis. They had Santana Moss, you know, they had DeSean Jackson for a while. Like they've had really good players. They had Chris Samuels, one of the best tackles in the league for a while. But the sum total of what they've had has been 6 or 7 wins. Ryan Kerrigan, you know, like low key, one of the best pass rushers in the league for a while.
It would be fair to also point out that they faced 2 significant blows that are like, trajectory altering for a franchise. Yeah. One is the death of Sean Taylor. Because Sean Taylor was, I mean, he was going to be like Ed Reed meets, I mean, he was already
phenomenal.
Ed Reed
meets Steve Atwater, man. I mean, that's my call.
Yeah. Ed Reed meets like Luke Kuechly. Yeah. Like he was the best linebacker and the best safety in the league.
Exactly.
And I mean, that might be a slight exaggeration, but he was the kind of guy you can build an entire defense around and offenses were afraid of him. And then Robert Griffin, had, you know, he blew out his knee, but he was the first guy that I can remember. So there was Michael Vick, who was extreme athlete who could throw, but was not a great thrower. Griffin was an extreme athlete who could really throw, and then he blew out his knee. And like if he had been healthy and they could have figured out how to build an offense around him, all of a sudden they potentially do have a franchise guy.
Yeah.
And so they lost franchise guy on defense and franchise guy on offense within a few years of each other. And so all of those other talented pieces are kind of for naught.
Exactly. Well, and people forget that on that 2012 RG3 team, I mean, they had Kyle Shanahan designing that offense, and the current iteration of the 49ers are doing a lot of the same things that the Redskins were doing in 2012. And Shanahan is now the darling of kind of NFL coaching conversations. So, yeah, if they could have somehow...
Yeah, and Sean McVay came
out of there. If they could have kept some semblance of that unit together, they could have had a lot of success. But I think, a lot of that points back to ownership and management, and you know, a lot of the dubious decision making that's gone on there. So I don't think it's an easy place to coach, and I think that speaks to ownership too. And it may be tough for somebody with Ron Rivera's pedigree of being, you know, longtime NFL player, longtime NFL coach. Had some success. He may he may have a tough time with the ownership there. So New York Giants, Pipe, staying in the NFC East for a minute, hired the New England Patriots wide receivers coach. This was not a name that, if you listen to NFL podcasts or read NFL media at all, it wasn't a name that was even out there. What do you think of this hire?
So his name is what, Joe Judge, something like that. So I was listening to, when I first saw it, I scoffed. I was like, that is the dumbest hire. First of all, no Belichick coaching offspring has been good. Yeah. I don't think there's any of them that have been
good. Maybe Vrabel is doing the best of any of them at this point.
So far.
Yeah.
But Vrabel was not a coach under Belichick, I don't think, was he?
No, that he was. I think.
Because wasn't he in Houston?
Yeah, he was somewhere else.
He played under Belichick, and then I think he was a defensive coordinator in Houston or something like that. And their defense wasn't very good in Houston. But so that's one problem. And then I was like, he's a wide receivers coach. That's insane. Turns out he was their special teams coordinator previously, and there seems to be sort of a rising tide of looking at special teams coordinators as uniquely positioned coaches to move into a head coaching job because of all of the, they have to work with every different position grouping on the team and all the different coaches. And so there's, it's sort of a unique preparation ground. I think Belichick was a special teams coordinator early in his career too, so he has an affinity for those guys. So that's one of those, like, who knows? Yep. Like, we'll wait and see. I was surprised, but also it's the Giants and they suck. Yeah. So, like, they don't have talent. They're a bad team. They don't – I think a great coach might get them to 8 wins.
Yeah, dude, the Giants are kind they're kind of Redskins-esque in the same ways that we just described, in that they have a couple of transcendent players who are really going to be mired in mediocrity because of who they play for, you know. Saquon Barkley, I don't know. Who are the other transcendent players? That might be it. Evan Engram is
no, I mean, because they got rid of – they. I mean, Odell Beckham's gone. They have – who is it? Evan Engram, tight end, who's like – he's a top 7 tight end in the league. But, like, if that's your most exciting – your second most exciting offensive player.
Right.
They don't have any skill position talent. Their defense is not very good. Like, they're just a bad team. So they – there's a major roster rebuild that needs to happen there.
Daniel Jones, do you buy him as a starting quarterback?
Who knows? A rookie quarterback with no talent around him, it's just impossible to evaluate. Yeah. My only hope is that the struggles he had this year are not the kind of thing that sets a course for him. I want to see every rookie quarterback be good. Good quarterback play is great for the NFL.
Yeah.
So I hope he gets good.
So speaking of
not a great
speaking start. Of that, Piper, speaking of good quarterback play, we'll leave with this because I have to go teach school. So if you could trade Kirk Cousins for any of the, like, high-end quarterback prospects coming out of college this year. So Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, Jake Fromm, Tua just declared. So we've got 4 guys there that are kind of the Jacob Eason, I guess, maybe is in that conversation. But four guys all pretty high-end quarterback prospects coming out in this year's draft. Would you trade Kirk Cousins for one of them?
Yes. Okay. I would trade Kirk, well, for 2 reasons. First of all, just economically speaking, if you have an NFL starter quality on a rookie contract, it's the most valuable thing in
Absolutely.
Football. Because you're getting the most expensive position for like $3 million instead of $33 million. So straight up, I would do that just because imagine what the Vikings could do with an extra 20 whatever million dollars. That'd be amazing. But the other is, I think Tua and Joe Burrow have the chance to be really good. I think Tua is a better quarterback than Joe Burrow.
Interesting.
I think Burrow's phenomenal, but I'm skeptical because he burst onto the scene really out of nowhere. Yeah. And that doesn't mean he wasn't good. It might have just meant that he was in a bad situation before. They didn't have the right offensive coordinator. I think Tua's got a better arm. I think he's a little bit more mobile. And I think he played in a little bit – a system that did more NFL things and succeeded in a more traditional NFL offense, realizing that the NFL offense is very fluid now. It's not just drop-back passing. Yeah. So – the only question there is his hip.
Yeah.
If his hip was healthy, I would 100% take him over Burrow. And Burrow is a great consolation.
Absolutely.
Prize. But I think I would trade Kirk for either of those guys, but I'd go Tua first.
Yeah. Dude, again, it's somewhat shocking just the economics of the quarterback market in the NFL. And I think that was, to me, what was so incongruous about the Cousins signing was the scenario that you just explained, right? If you could get Cousins level production out of somebody on their first contract, why do you like mortgage the future just to bring in a guy who's like the 15th best at his position? But
what's hard is that like the risk is going back to the Christian Ponder thing.
That's right.
Where you start stretching for quarterbacks to get the $3 million guy, but you have a $3 million terrible quarterback. Yeah. And there's only a handful of quarterbacks, like a very small number, who you look at and you go, this guy is a game changer.
Yeah.
Like, we thought Drew Brees was that guy, and he struggled this year. Tom Brady is aging out of that. So right now it's like Patrick Mahomes, Russell Wilson. I think Lamar Jackson has now entered that territory. And not very many other guys. And so you have to pay for something because the fall off, like if you don't have Kirk Cousins, you have maybe Ryan Tannehill or you have Ryan Fitzpatrick, or like, do you just, you get, it gets ugly quick.
It does. It does. Yeah. It's weird out there. Or you have Sam Darnold, who you don't really know what you have yet because the team has been so bad.
Speaking of coaching changes, Adam Gase is one that should have happened because he is.
No, awful. Dude, I'm with you.
I don't know how he gets.
It's jumped. Weird that like the Jets are, they're just staying in this kind of Adam Gase purgatory for another year with Darnold, which really kills me because I feel like Darnold could have been great. And I really wanted to see him be great just because he was really fun to watch in college and he's got the huge arm. And yeah, you just want to see guys like that do well. He seemed like a good dude too. But yeah, he'll be the victim of kind of first contract purgatory with a bad coach and an organization that's going nowhere. So yeah, it's a strange world, Piper, but I have enjoyed being back on doing sports radio with you. This has been a lot of fun again, but
yeah, it's been too long. We'll have
to, it has been too long. And I think you and I mentally are both going to shift into like NBA and MLB territory here pretty soon, which will be fun. We can start talking about that some more as well. Again, special thanks to our sponsor, 503 Sports, 503-sports.com for all of your retro football, baseball, and basketball swag needs. Piper, we have done what we always do on this program in that we have wandered to and fro throughout some sports topics. And until next time, Dante Culpepper.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Jesus wants our fears to launch us toward faith. Then he grins and says, "Do you trust me? Because together we can do this." With Mornings with Jesus, you can start your day in a positive way. Find hope through inspirational stories and scripture. Go to lifeaudio.com or search your favorite podcast app for Mornings with Jesus. You can also download the Abide app for biblical meditations at abide.com.